Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I'm Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morial. And Mike, we are live in Buffalo with the 2024 NHL Scouting Combine, and we have a couple of great guests for the show today.
Always a pleasure to be in Buffalo, right, Adam? It's good eats, good drinks, and great prospects, and we always have an opportunity to speak to that team, an individual from that team that is choosing number one. And this year we have Chris Morehouse, the director of amateur scouting for the San Jose Sharks. We'll discuss all things Celebrini, the draft, which is going to be great. And then, of course, we'll have the man of the hour. We'll have Macklin Celebrini on the podcast. It's going to be a real special episode for sure.
I think we all have a pretty good feeling that Macklin Celebrini is going to be the number one pick. It's been interesting. It's been interesting. Last year, the Chicago Blackhawks, we all knew they were taking Connor Bedard, but Kyle Davidson was very cagey. You know, we haven't made any decisions, blah, blah, blah. But we all knew what they were going to do. This year, Mike Greer, he's been asked numerous times, Celebrini's most likely going to be our guy. So it's really fun seeing it from that standpoint where it's like, let's just get the obvious out of the way.
Absolutely. And it's nice. It's nice to have that clarity going into the draft because we can kind of formulate our stories already too, Adam, right? That's also a good thing to make sure we can get the stories done in advance. We know who the team is picking. That's what I'm looking at.
Well, sure. If they want to do our work for us, more power to them. I'm on board with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know what, Adam? We're here at the Combine. It's a special week. We love it here. 100 players invited this year. We had 62 forwards, 35 defensemen. We got three goaltenders. The players for the London Knights and Saginaw, Zane Parrick was here. They arrived last night. So 2 days into the Combine, Sam O'Reilly and Sam Dickinson of London. There was the two finalists for the Memorial Cup. Saginaw came out on top. So they're here. We have all the players in the house. It's a special, special week. The interviewing process going on this week. And then we have the testing on Saturday.
Yeah, it's always fun to see what the teams put more of an accent on. You know, they spend 4 or 5 days here meeting the prospects. You know, some teams will meet with upwards of 50, 60, even 70 kids in those half-hour blocks to get to know them as people as much as they are. You know, they know what they can do on the ice. Now they get the chance to meet them in person, see what they're like, see how they kind of handle different situations. Always like asking, have you gotten any weird offbeat questions? I did get one, but it's weird that it's only been one. One prospect told me a team asked him, define the color blue. Like, I don't know how you answer
that.
He said it's kind of like the sky and the ocean and a little bit less of a shade than purple. And I said, I mean, you're right. I don't know what exactly they were looking for, but you're spot on.
Yeah, there was another prospect that I spoke to that I asked any crazy questions. Did you do anything inside these rooms? They said, yeah, it wasn't actually a question, but they had board games, puzzles that they were doing. And he said he had to put, like, keys into certain slots. And he goes, it was really fun. It was almost like an IQ-type test.
That's for these. Interesting.
So it was the board game thing was a little interesting to me.
I don't think I've ever heard that in 15, 16 years of doing the Combine. I don't think I've ever heard board games. That's cool.
Never.
But it's always an interesting approach, and we're going to have the fitness testing as we get later in the week. That's also a huge component of it. They get to see what these kids are like as athletes in hockey-adjacent sort of skills where they're able to measure them, upper body strength, lower body strength. So it's a really well-rounded process. All 32 teams are here. A lot of GMs are here. Amateur scouts are here. Strength and conditioning coaches are here. So everybody gets to learn something from this process.
And everyone talks about the bike tests and what players have to go to. The Wingate, we've talked about this ad nauseum, Adam, with these tests and what they have to go through with these bikes. Wingate is almost like playing on that penalty kill, right? Mad scramble until you get back to the bench. And then that VO2 max is kind of the ability to recover from a shift so that you can go out there again and continue to performing at a high level. So we love the bike tests. That's coming later in the week. But for now, we have some guests.
Well, we love the bike tests because we don't have to get on the bikes.
No, that's right.
That's right. The best part. But yes, we do have fantastic guests today, as we said earlier. Chris Morehouse, the Director of Amateur Scouting for the San Jose Sharks. But before we get to Chris, we had the opportunity to sit down with Boston University freshman center Macklin Celebrini, the projected number one pick in the 2024 NHL draft. Here is our conversation with Macklin. How's this week been for you so far? I know you've met with a bunch of teams. Have you had any funny, interesting, unique kind of questions?
No, not too many so far. It's been pretty chill, like not much going on except for the interviews and stuff. So a lot of time to spend time with some of my buddies who are here.
I know you had an opportunity to speak to the Sharks and GM Mike Greer. How'd that interview go? I'm sure there were a lot of smiles, a lot of good questions your way.
Yeah, no, it went really well. It was good to meet their whole staff that was there and put faces to names that I've heard a bunch. So I thought the interview went really well.
So I know you've been asked a few times, and I'm sure you're going to get asked a few more times, about whether you want to jump to the NHL next season. And you've said you're not there yet with making a decision, but what are some of the things that you're weighing as far as pros and cons going to the NHL versus staying another year in college?
I feel like it's just mostly the situation I'm going to be put in, both sides. I'm still going to have to talk about that with my family and my advisors and kind of make the decision that's best for me and makes the most sense for my career.
How did it all kind of start for you, Macklin, as far as hockey's concerned? Were other sports a part of your upbringing? Obviously, your dad and mom, big soccer players. Was soccer a big part of that? And how did you ultimately choose hockey? And being the competitor that you are, I'm sure you wanted to go full force with hockey on the ice.
Yeah, no, growing up, like you said, I play a lot of soccer and hockey growing up. Those were kind of the two main things that I did. And I mean, I loved playing hockey ever since I can remember. I don't remember starting, but I've heard stories and I know that the passion I had for it. So that's something that kind of stuck with me. And I mean, I chose hockey over soccer for that reason, because I loved it. I loved being on the ice, and I really enjoyed it.
You know, Mike mentioned your dad, Rick Celebrini. He's director of sports medicine for the Golden State Warriors. He's worked with Vancouver FC. So he's been around high-level, elite-level athletes. You've been exposed to that, either, you know, watching him or hearing him talk about it. How much of that has sort of helped you become the athlete that you are, and to understand, maybe better than other kids your age might, what it takes to be an elite athlete on the field, on the ice, and off the ice?
Yeah, growing up, I spent a lot of time around those high-level athletes with whatever sport they played, basketball, soccer, hockey. So it was really good to kind of learn from them, see them. It's kind of funny because I get that question a lot, and a lot of those athletes that you guys are talking about are when I was much younger. And I feel like even though I don't, like, remember it and, like, I don't have specific memories, I do feel like I still picked up on things, and I still, like, just being around them, I learned from them.
So one story that I did hear, Draymond Green from the Golden State Warriors, they rolled through Chicago, I think it was last season when you were there. He wanted to see you play. This is a three-time NBA champion, probably a Hall of Fame basketball player. When those guys are excited to see you play, what does that say? How do you kind of take that in? What was that experience like for you, knowing he was coming to see you?
Yeah, it was really cool. I really enjoyed it, just having them there, having that whole group that came up to watch that game. It was special for them to come, and I know it meant a lot to me and my teammates, but I think it was just more coming from my dad worked with the organization, so there's a hockey game when they were in town, so they wanted to come watch.
Growing up in Vancouver, what do you remember about the North Shore Winter Club, playing there, getting your start? And then ultimately having to go to San Jose. You played a little hockey in San Jose there with the youth team. And then taking that kind of that U.S. route, you go to Shattuck, and then you finally make the determination to go to BU. But just the North Shore Winter Club, yeah, in Vancouver, where it all started for you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't bounce around when I was a lot younger. I played for the North Shore Winter Club growing up the whole time, like from age 3 till, I mean, when I left when I was 12 years old or 13 years old. So that was a big part of my childhood and a big part of my career, like starting there, starting hockey there, and kind of going up through the levels.
So I'm curious, everybody talks about your drive and your determination, your competitive on the ice. I want to ask about off the ice. You know, you had the shoulder injury last season, you had the surgery, and there's some real doubt if you'd be ready to start the season on time. But there you are, game one, score a goal, you assist on the overtime winner in the season opener. You know, that speaks to the determination that you have off the ice. Was there ever a doubt in your mind that you'd be ready to start the season? Because everyone else sort of was curious, but for you, as you're going through the rehab, were you locked in, I'm going to be in that first game no matter what?
I mean, I wanted to, mm-hmm. like everyone does. Like, you want to start the season on time. You never want to miss games. I didn't know right when I got the surgery if I was going to be ready, just because it would have depended on how the shoulder healed and how it progressed over those months. So I throughout the whole process, I was talking to my dad, talking to my surgeon, and then the closer we got, the more realistic it became, because I'd never put the rest of the season on the line just to start the season, but it happened to be where we were when that game came around, that date. It was fully strong, healthy. I was able to play contact for at least a week and a half before that, 2 weeks before that. So I knew it was strong, healthy, and ready to go. So I had a lot of confidence in it going into that game. That's kind of how we made that decision to play it.
Macklin, what makes you the competitor you are? Because you're the type of guy, and I always refer to you as Jonathan Taves used to be called Captain Serious. Mm. Taves, I know, went to Shattuck St. Mary's. Sometimes you have that serious business-like approach to the game. I know you like to have fun, but there's that competitiveness about you that everyone talks about. Where do you get that drive?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, both my parents are competitive whenever we play family little basketball games or whatever, but no, I feel like it's just, I like whatever we're playing, whatever I'm doing, I just want to win. So I feel like that's kind of where that compete comes.
And did you sense that too when you're on the bench at BU in certain situations where you're the freshman of the team, but still that competitive verve kind of enters your mind? You want to help your teammates get a win, you know, get a goal, tie the game. Is that always with you wherever you might be, on the ice, on the bench?
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing, kind of the age and stuff doesn't matter. It's whoever's going to do whatever it takes to win. So I feel like that kind of goes out the window when you're playing in those moments. Like, you're not worried about being a younger guy, being an older guy, anything like that. I feel like you want to do whatever you can to help the team win. And I mean, I feel like everyone felt that way in our group.
So all season long, even probably before this season, the talk was Macklin Celebrini is going to be the number one pick in the 24 draft. It's a lot of pressure to put on someone, especially someone who's still only 17 years old. How were you able to handle that spotlight, that attention? And when, you know, you'd have a moment, who were you able to kind of lean on to, you know, keep the train on the track, so to speak?
I had an amazing group around me this whole year. My family, my friends, and my teammates, my coaches. I had a lot of people who I could kind of lean on, rely on, and ask questions to throughout this process. And I mean, obviously, no matter where you are, no matter where you play, you're always going to have pressure, different expectations. So the most important thing is, I mean, doing whatever you can on the ice. And as long as you take care of that, I feel like everything else takes care of itself. So that's kind of what I tried to focus on the most, just whatever I can do on the ice, just do to the best of my ability, and everything else will kind of figure itself out.
One of your good friends who's also here, USA National Team Development Programs, under 18, Cole Eiserman. Obviously, he has one of the better shots of this draft class. Talk about the relationship you've had with Cole over the years. Obviously, you guys were together 2 years, two seasons mm-hmm. at Shattuck St. Mary's. What's the relationship like? And I guess it's something that's still carries on today and will whenever you guys are in the NHL.
Yeah, like you said, we went to Shattuck together for 2 years. He pretty much lived in my room the first year, and then we actually lived together the second year. But he's been one of my best friends since then, and we still keep in touch, still talk, still kind of go over things together. Like, I mean, he's someone I can rely on. I'm someone he can rely on, I hope. And yeah, that relationship has really gone stronger over the years, especially growing up together and having that experience together.
So I gotta ask, what kind of a roommate is he?
He's great. He's always entertaining. There's never a dull moment with that guy. So we had a lot of fun together.
He's not too sloppy or anything like that. He wouldn't steal the TV remote all the time.
Oh no, he's very clean. He's much more clean than I thought he would be. So it was enjoyable to live with.
Is there anything specifically you can tell us or share with us that Boston University coach Jay Pandolfo taught you and was able to help you mature and grow and develop this year?
Yeah, he's been an amazing role model for me and someone who has taught me a lot, especially over this last year. We always did video and break down my games and stuff. And I mean, he'd never want to change the way I play, but the whole point of those video meetings was him to teach me and point out some things that he feels like I need to improve on, which I really appreciate. And his honesty with that was, I mean, it's what helped me kind of improve and get better through the year. So, I mean, it was even just little stuff like positioning or just even team structure that he felt like could help me have more success. So he was amazing throughout the year and helped me a ton.
So the fitness testing is coming up. We're going to finish with the interviews here, and you're going to have to really get into it. You got the bike tests, all the other things. Did anybody, any of your teammates, your brother Aiden went through this a couple years ago, they give you tips on what to expect, the bike test, the wind gate, the VO2, what it would be like?
Yeah, I talked to a couple guys about it. They said nothing to really worry about. They said just, I mean, you should be fit, strong, and ready for it anyways. Whether you prepare for it or not, you should be kind of in shape and ready by this point. So they said, I mean, just do your best. And I mean, they didn't put much worry in my head.
When you watch Connor Bedard, what do you see?
I mean, he's almost like a magician on the ice, like just the way he's able to possess the puck and the plays he's able to do or able to make. It's pretty special to watch up close and on TV.
Does it amaze you what he's been able to do as a rookie in the NHL or what he was able to do?
Yeah, he's very impressive. An 18-year-old, I mean, going into the NHL, I mean, you only think about, like, the guys like Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon who were able to do that. And for him to be able to do what he did, it was pretty cool to watch.
So I know you got to get to Rogers Arena for a couple of the Vancouver playoff games. It had been a very long time since the Canucks had hosted a playoff game. What was that experience sitting in the crowd and being part of that environment?
It was amazing. That was like the first real like Canucks playoff game that I can remember, and the atmosphere, the fans, and like the team. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience for me and my brother, and we both walked away pretty impressed by the whole situation.
A couple speed round questions for you here. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Slap shot or wrist shot?
Wrist shot.
Favorite midday snack?
Fruit.
Pizza topping?
Cheese.
Ice cream flavor?
Vanilla.
Facebook or Instagram?
Instagram.
Any pregame ritual that you have?
No.
No superstitions? No superstitions?
I mean, I tape my stick the same way, but nothing crazy.
All right. Well, I think is the lightning round over?
I think it is.
All right. Macklin Celebrini, thank you so much for joining us today in NHL Draft Class.
Thank you, guys.
Some great stuff there, Adam, from Macklin Celebrini. Obviously, confidence oozing from him. You could just see his posture. He's got a couple more interviews left here during this week of interviewing for the combine. Then he's going to hit the testing on Saturday. He just has that look of a player that, you know, looks like the San Jose Sharks are going to take him number one, but he has that look of a player that's going to be a franchise star in the NHL.
For sure. You know, he's as relaxed as you can possibly be. You know, he's the one guy who absolutely knows where he's going between now and when we get to Vegas. Like, he might as well just put the jersey on right now, because I don't think there's any kind of suspense left who's going to go number one. But I thought it was interesting when he talked about, you know, is he NHL ready? And he's really, you could see he's really putting the thought process in, because we just assume, you know, whether it's Connor Bedard, Connor McDavid, you know, guys in years past, that number one pick, we just assume they're going to shoot right into the NHL. He's really putting some serious thought in, and, you can make, you know, I asked him pros and cons to going back to school versus coming out of the NHL. Look, the San Jose Sharks are not going to be playoff contenders next year. He goes back to college. He's got a shot to play World Juniors. He's got a shot to win a national title. There is a lot to be gained from going back to college. There's also a lot to be gained from coming into the NHL and starting that process and helping the Sharks get to where they eventually hope to get to. So it's there's a lot going on. There's a lot for him to sift through. And I think he's got the right people around him to make that decision. His coach at BU, his parents, obviously both high-level athletes. They've been not the same process, but they've been through similar situations. So I think he's going to get really outstanding advice. And whatever decision he makes, you know, short term, long term, it's probably going to be the best one for him.
Look, there is some unfinished business at Boston University, right? He didn't win a beanpot. He didn't win the national championship. He did get a Hobie Baker. That's there as the youngest player to win the Hobie. But there are some championship level aspects that I'm sure he wanted to, you know, celebrate with his team because that's the type of player he is. He's a team first guy. So there's always that. There's always that he can look into and discuss with Jay Pandolfo. But I think this is a kid that seems has the look and feel of a kid that's ready. And I thought it was interesting, too, Adam, that this is Macklin Celebrini is a Canadian born, but he kind of took that U.S. route to get to where he is and could be going to a U.S. based team in San Jose. So that makes makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, and there's also the possibility of World Junior Gold. If he goes back, he didn't get that. But you know, we talked to also Chris Morehouse, the director of amateur scouting for the San Jose Sharks. Let's listen in on that conversation we had with Chris. Let's get right into Macklin Celebrini, the consensus number one pick in this year's draft. Sharks GM Mike Greer hasn't really hid the fact that Celebrini's likely going to be the choice when you guys go to the stage in Las Vegas. So I'm curious, when you've watched Celebrini, what has stood out about his game, the strengths of it, and what you've really liked about it?
Yeah, I think his on-ice play speaks for itself. If anyone had a chance to watch him play he's still 17 until mid-August, I believe.
Yeah, he's got a very late birthday.
So to do what he did at the college level, and you watch him play internationally, and just you meet him and get to spend some time with him, you can see all and understand where all the hype and excitement comes from. And certainly we're very fortunate and lucky to be sitting in the one hole this year, and obviously there's still a lot of work to be done. This is just kind of step two of the combine. We get all the information, then we go back and we continue to work and put our list together until the draft. So obviously we're very fortunate, but we have our first pick. We have 14, we have 33 and 42. So that's a really good opportunity for our group to continue to build what we put together last year, and what, obviously Mike had the year before with Bystead and Havlin and that group. So, it's the one pick is a great thing to think about, but it's also, now we have to manage the draft and figure out, okay, how can we make the San Jose Sharks that much better with what we also have later on in the draft?
I know we know a lot about Macklin Celebrini on the ice. Chris, this week you had an opportunity to speak with him during the interviewing stages here at the Combine. I'm just curious what that interview was like and what kind of person is he off the ice?
It's everything you read and hear about the kid is true. I mean, we did meet with him yesterday, Monday. What's today? Days blend together. But no, he's an exceptional kid. He obviously, we always look at, the family did an incredible job. He clearly has a great foundation at home, and you can see the drive, the work ethic, the competitiveness, and again, there's a certain look, in my opinion, that the very best have, and it's not always there with everybody. And I'm sure you guys covering your hockey, you can see it with there's just a difference. And I think when you're around it, you kind of get that feeling of it. And there's just, it doesn't come around all the time. And there's so many labels and names, and everybody puts way too much pressure on these kids way too fast. And I think the reality of it is you just kind of have to let everyone's going to come at different times. Everyone's going to develop differently. And it doesn't mean that they're any less than what's there before. It's just their paths are a little bit different. And so when we look at them, we're trying to get to know these kids. We're just trying to get to know how they tick, what makes them operate, And every now and then you interview or you talk to these kids, it's just a little bit different. You know, I remember years ago, Kale McCarr came in and sat down with a notepad and was asking us questions and some of the things. And you pick up traits from the very best. And so when you try and, you know, piece things together in your own head of looking at this from the, you know, into the future. And when you come around these guys every so often, it's like, we interviewed Bedard last year. We knew we weren't going to get Bedard at four, but we wanted to just kind of what makes him tick, get a feel for him as a person. And, you know, you sit with him and you meet with him, you're like, you understand why he can shoot the puck the way he can. Cause it's not a skill set for him. It's a way of life. It's what he wants to do. It's how he trains. It's how he prepares. So, and usually behind all these great players is the one common thing, is that drive, that work ethic. And it's different for everybody, right? Work ethic and compete for more of a fourth line checking role might come across as different than a first line goal scorer, but the very best, they're as much as competitive as the fourth, just in different ways.
So one of the things is that competitiveness has kind of stood out about Celebrini when we've watched him. Does that make him an NHL player as soon as next season? I know Macklin's going to get asked about it. I'm curious from your perspective.
And I'm going to pull the old, the kid's going to, and again, it's kind of the answer that you get when you feel like people don't want to answer you, but it's the truth. I think, and again, that's the one thing, you know, working with Mike and the Sharks organization is, you know, You put the kids first, and you make sure that they're going to be put in the best situation for them to develop and grow. And we have a fantastic development staff with Todd Marchand and Lucas Pisa and Tommy Wingles and Nick Sundstrom. We're really lucky to have a group that, you know, all throughout the world that manages these kids. So if it is Celebrini and that comes to that decision after the draft and it becomes that, you know, that's going to be a conversation that – That's not for me. It's more of what's best for the kid, you know, what's best for, you know, the future of the Sharks as well as the future of whatever player that is.
As you mentioned earlier, Chris, 9 picks in this draft. You have 4 in the opening 2 rounds. What's the club's philosophy behind drafting? How many players were you interviewing at the combine? Are you interviewing? And what's your philosophy behind finding maybe that player in the early rounds compared to maybe later on?
You know, we're doing roughly 70 guys here. We're a little bit, you know, me personally, we're here. We might as well gather the information. And I think this is the one unique area where you can get access to these kids. This is your only chance. And then once they get drafted, they're not they're not NHL property. They're the team's property. So you lose. So for me, it's more of an information gathering. We're still at that point where, believe it or not, 3 weeks out, we're still gathering information. You know, we're going to get psychology stuff back. We're going to get the physical testing back. I mean, we're trying to build the most accurate picture of the player. Well, you can't leave out the brain and the physical physique with just what you see on the ice. So we're still in that stage. And again, you know, without giving draft secrets, we're still in the – you know, trying to accumulate talent, but also understanding where we're at, what we have. You know, I always say in amateur scouting, it's so unique because you have to have an eye on where you are. You kind of have to have an eye on where you want to go, but you also have to, you know, pay attention to not keep getting what you already have. So it's and that might not come out exactly how I want to say it, but you know, if you continue to draft the same type of player every year, you are kind of dismissing that asset. Do you see what I mean? Because it's so, you know, for us, it's, we have a, you know, our amateur staff works their butt off all year. We put things together, we meet with the every guys, and then we go through it, and then we'll get into a smaller group with you know, Mike, and we'll figure out which direction we want to go and have a plan. And ultimately, when we sit down on draft day, we'll execute the plan we have.
So sort of kind of going off of that, at 14, you know, everyone kind of knows what you're going to do at number 1. At 14, there's a whole pool of possibilities for you. When you focus in on that spot, are you strictly best available player? Or if there's a tie, will you lean towards, we're looking for kind of this player, or we really think we need that position?
It's a hard question to ask, but I still think in that area of the draft, you're still – you know, you're gravitating towards the talent aspect. Mm-hmm. I think there are some situations where you, again, you do start to, you know, the need versus want versus talent, best talent available. It's also, you know, you also want to draft a kid that's going to be put in the best situation to succeed. So again, going back to if, again, there's you guys, the media, who put out their list and have their order, right, which is great. But then there's also the in a way, you guys dictate the value of each kid to start the draft. Not you personally, but the media in general puts out the list. Then all of a sudden it says, well, that player's rated one. Who says that? The media does.
Right.
So then the value of those players really become driven by media base. So I always like to tell our guys, our job is to figure out, are they right? Is there somewhere in the middle, or, and what's the gap of the players in between? So it's, and that's not a knock on you guys at all. It's just the reality of it is you got the lists come out at the beginning of every year, and all of a sudden it's Taylor versus Tyler. It's Nolan versus Nathan or Nico. Well, we forgot about Makar and Haskinen. You know, we don't forget about them. So our, it's kind of that, you know, you're the idea of the best player available to that pick for the general consensus might not be what ours is. So that's where you get the ones where, well, what they do that for? Well, if you think about it, we're trying to piece together a team. We're necessarily thinking that value of that player on our team might not be the same value of if you take that player and put him somewhere else. So it's that, it's kind of that, you know, the, you have to pay attention to what everyone's saying, because you also have to respect the amount of work that goes into those opinions. But you also have to keep a mindset of, there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of noise for all these kids. And it's coming from all angles. It's coming from, you know, who puts what event they played well in. Did recency bias, you know, well, they played at the Worlds against men. There's all these different things that go into it. And for us, I just want our guys to cut it all out. Again, in my opinion, immediately, everybody likes a back and forth. Everybody likes that battle, the battle at the top. Like, everybody wants that head-to-head versus, you know, who's going to go one versus two. And you know, yes, everybody likes a clear cut. But in general, it's, you know, it's those, that's what engages people. It's following the kids and you watch them through. So I get it in terms, I mean, it does. We get Central Scouting's list. We work off of that. I'm not discrediting, they work. Well, those guys I see everywhere on the rink. They work their tails off. It's just more of, you know, we have to figure out the middle ground of what might work for what might be the list in terms of talent that doesn't fit for your own individual group.
You know your team better than anybody else. You know what you need, and it doesn't necessarily jibe with what Central Scouting says, what we say the public list is. Right.
Yeah, and I say, you know, my job is to execute Mike Greer's plan for the Sharks. And I think, you know, I worked with, you know, John Lilly in New York, and he mentioned that to me one, just said that to me, and it's stuck with me how, you know, I'm hired to execute the team that Mike wants in terms of the amateur scouting. And so whether it's right now we're accumulating picks and we're trying to, you know, get as much young talent and draft well and go through this process of filling up the cupboards again, there's going to be a time, hopefully, where I'm going to be getting the call, hey, you don't have a first anymore, you don't have a second, and I'll cry for a little bit. But in general, it's my, if I can continue to, you know, fulfill and execute and we do this together, and that's the best part about Mike is, you know, the inclusivity and allowing, you know, the communication and the back and forth where, you know, I always know where his head's at and where we're at because I'm not there every day. And then I know in terms of where we want to go and the direction. And so it's a really good thing. And like I tell our guys, we have a really unique opportunity to have a direct impact on how the San Jose Sharks look for the next 5 to 10 years. And so if you can wrap that around it, there's a lot of pressure around it, but it's also exciting because, you know, we're not the ones that look for the, scouts aren't the ones that look for the notoriety, or we just do it because we want to help the organization. So when we're out in the road and guys are, you know, you guys know what scouts, you know, driving through. I mean, we drove last year. We had meetings in San Jose after the top prospect game. It was in Moncton, right? We drove from Moncton back to Bangor after the game.
Wow.
And it was that snowstorm. It was awful. And I've driven that road many times because lived in St. John, driven, going to watch prep school from Moncton anyways. So then we got up. We made it to Bangor at like 2 a.m. We got up, drove to Boston to catch a flight to go to San you know, again, not great travel planning, but in reality, it's, you know, these, we, scouts are a different breed. They're on the road. They're doing it. And again, we, all we want to do is be able to contribute. And this is a great opportunity for us. Like you said, there's four picks in the top 45.
Two players, I'm really curious to see where they fall. Missed half their seasons. Caden Lidstrom, Adam Juracek, two quality players, injured earlier in the season, missed half the year. I'm curious how, you know, your club kind of navigates that when it comes to evaluating players that missed half the season. And obviously you have reports on these players from previous seasons, so you know what they're like. But particularly at the combine, we have that opportunity to talk to them, see the medicals. I guess some of them might be testing, some might not. How do you navigate that scenario?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we get all the medical information we can. Obviously, both kids played a lot as an underage. Both played enough international events early on. I mean, Juracek played in November in U20, played Linka. You know, he played enough. Both kids, I would say, quote unquote, played enough that teams will have an idea of, it's more of, okay, where are we at with this? What's the injury? Because they're both injuries that require to make sure. Because I think they're both, you know, I think you just have to make sure that they're going to be okay and they're going to, you know, heal properly. And it seems like they're both well on their way. But it's a little bit different where it's, you know what, I think Galchenyuk that one year played three games,
yeah,
right? Or you get a guy that doesn't have an opportunity to play, you know, any type of hockey. I think both have played enough and guys have seen him enough that I think now it's ultimately figuring out they're healthy.
So we're here at the Scouting Combine, and I'm always curious with the interview process. Some kids are going to be very into it. You mentioned Makar earlier. Some are going to be a little more reserved, maybe shy. In your role, you got to get to know these kids. Do you have a go-to, maybe icebreaker question just to kind of get them to open up a little bit?
I think you just kind of read the room and you read the situation. Believe it or not, most kids are, like we were actually saying in a room yesterday, even from an international standpoint, I remember coming here 10 years ago and almost every kid needed an interpreter, or almost every, you know, international kid would feel uncomfortable in a room. Not uncomfortable where it's, but just their, you know, their language. And now almost every kid comes in and their English is good. Mm-hmm. They're just a different, there's no interpreter. And now again, the Russians aren't here. That was a lot of the interpretation was needed for the Russian players, but just in general, it's funny. We asked him, like, your English. We talked to a Czech player, and he said, I learned English in 2 years by watching Canadian movies or American movies. So just from watching English, that's how he learned. So these kids are sharp. They understand. They want to be able to communicate. So, yeah, it's really impressive to see how they've just kind of where they're all really well prepared. They're well prepared. These kids come in, and that's the other delicate part of it is how much of it is genuine versus how much of it is, well, this is my eighth interview of the day. I've said the same thing seven times. I got this. Right? So you have to figure out kind of the happy medium. But we've already, at this point, our scouts have already done one-on-one interviews. They've already, you know, they helped build our questions for here. We've already done other steps along the way to get to know the kids. So this is, if you're coming in here trying to make your decision on a player in 15 minutes, you're in big trouble. So we just kind of, does it match up? Do we kind of like, you know, ultimately we just want to get to know the kid and see if it's something that, you know, you guys know being part of a team, you walk in, is that fit? Does it, you know, those things you can get relatively early.
Is it tough not having the Russian-born players here?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a political question, but terms of
there are some quality Russian players playing over in Russia for this draft that I think could go top five, top 10. And I guess that's what I'm leading
the,
at.
We're lucky. The agencies are putting together camps. So like, for example, Milstein's camp is in Florida, so those kids are going to be there with some of his top guys like Dimadov, Surin, Chernasov, yep. Protas, Lushunov. So there'll be a camp there where he's allowing access to those kids. So I give – the agents are doing a great job of kind of filling in the back part of it. It's hard without him here. That's in terms of whether they should be or not, I'm not getting right. into that. But yep. in terms of would it be great to have them here and be a part of their peers and see them and let them interact with kids. And, again, it's you know, it should be about the kids. That's the one thing that I'll say.
You know, this is going to be your third draft with the Sharks. You're already starting to see a little bit of the fruition. Will Smith signed. I would assume he's going to be in the lineup. You know, Musty, Luca Cagnoni, Philip Biested, all these guys took pretty significant jumps this year. Casper Halton had a fantastic season in London. There's a chance some of them are going to be with the Sharks next year. When you look at what you've done and now what you're going to add with Celebrini, whoever you get at number 14, you mentioned the two high picks in the second round. What's the excitement level for what you guys are building in San Jose and the not too distant future of getting back to being a playoff contender?
For us, it's at least in terms of where I'm at and our staff, it's just, it sounds kind of cliche and it is, but it's just that one step at a time. I mean, we've, you know, last year was my first draft in San Jose and we had a process in place and we executed. I think we did a really good job with Smith and Musty and Halton and Cagnoni and we feel, you know, Polkamp made big strides. He played for the World Junior team. So we, you know, even some later, there's the kid in Russia, Rimashevsky, as a seventh round, he was playing second line in Minsk and playoffs in the KHL. So we, you know, credit our scouts for that. And it's, you know, we kind of said this year, if we can end every year saying all our prospects have a chance to play. It's after, because you draft a kid, you know, relatively early, if no one wants to admit it. But, like, you kind of have an idea. Like, they show up at development camp, you're like, uh-oh, Mulligan. And that happens because we're guessing on, and if people say they don't, that doesn't happen, well, I'm sorry, it does. But in reality, if we can end every year saying, well, you know what, Cagnoni took a step, Halton took a step, you know, David Klee took a step, Landin took a step. So we can continue to go, obviously, Will Smith took a step, Musty, you know, so if you can do that and say, okay, they all have a chance, that's all we want to try and do as our group is draft these players that fit what we want to give them the chance to the time. You know, we have a great development staff, bring them into what we're trying to grow here and hopefully build a culture and a place that, you know, we want to get there, but we also want to get there. We can have the runs they've had before of 10 straight years or 15 yeah. straight years and get in every year. And the teams that can get in every year, give themselves a chance to win. And so it's building up that foundation and then hopefully getting it to the point where, you know, Mike can start trading all our picks away.
Chris, last one for me. This has been fantastic stuff. Once upon a time, you served as captain with Moncton in the Q. You had a teammate, Brad Marchand.
Yeah.
He goes number 71 in the draft. While playing with him, knowing what Brad was all about, did it surprise you he went that late in the draft? Did you anticipate he would be this special a player in the NHL?
You know, it's funny. I get asked about Brad all the time, and he was gone when I was captain. I was 18. He was 17, obviously, in his draft year. And to be honest with you, I say yes. I mean, like, he was – we talk about that competitiveness, and we talk about – and sometimes his competitiveness in junior came across as – you know, obviously had some rough, if you look through some of the history and, you know, he had some troubles in terms of that competitive coming across as selfishness and making poor decisions and whatever, Hockey Canada, those type of things. But Brad was an exceptional athlete. He was exceptionally competitive and him and Martin Carsoms that year were unbelievable in playoffs. As a 17-year-old, he was unbelievable. Brad was one of our better players every night. I mean, I sat there and watched it on the bench. Trust me. I wasn't getting a lot of shifts. But in all reality, there's the example of he is what he is because he's so highly talented. But he was smart earlier on. He went down. He adjusted. He adapted. He could play on the fourth line. He worked his way up. And And to become the leader and person doesn't surprise me. He's driven to be the best, and he was always that way. And it came across as, you know, that competitive spirit could rub people the wrong way, but it's awesome to see his leadership and where he is. And I certainly had nothing to do with it. But it was fun to say I got to play with him for a year, and that line of him and Martin Carsoms and just, they were incredible. Yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today on NHL Draft Class. This has been great stuff.
Thank you so much.
Mike, that was great stuff from Chris Morehouse. So much to sift through. You know, they're in such a fantastic spot, not just with number one, but with number 14, two high picks in the second round. You can see sort of what they're starting to build and how they're starting to use that draft capital to kind of get the Sharks back to where they were when it was the Thornton, Marlowe, Burns, Pavelski group, and they were consistent playoff / Stanley Cup contenders.
Absolutely. He had so much great information there about the process on how their scouting department goes about things, the philosophy to drafting players, whether it be high-end players in the first round or maybe 4, 5, 6. So good stuff. You know what I thought was really interesting, Adam, was when Chris started talking about, you know, in amateur scouting, there are three areas that you have to keep in mind all the time. And as he was talking and I'm thinking about it, it's so difficult. Like, you have to keep an eye on where you are as far as what your team has in its pipeline right now and what could be those players that could be joining the team, where you want to go. And then you have to pay attention to not getting what you already have. So three areas that I think play a key role in trying to define an organization and how you build a culture with a club.
Well, and it's also, it all goes into the team building, and he kind of touched on it, you know, all the various lists that come out. Central Scouting has a list. We have a list when we do our mock drafts. Other media people will do their mock drafts where they're judging on different criteria than what the teams look for, because what we think the Sharks need or what List X thinks the Sharks need, they know what they need, and there could be a difference. And you know, how do you kind of parse that opinion out where we say, oh, goodness, they reached to get this guy. Meanwhile, they're sitting and saying, we have a need for this skill set. This player has that skill set, and we're gonna take him where we think it fits best for us. And then we'll see who's right 4, 5, 6 years down the line. But I thought it was interesting how, you know, all of those things kind of go into the discussion where Central Scouting's list is a talking point. What we do when we do our mock drafts, that's a talking point for them. And it all sort of goes into their decision-making process. Thought it was really interesting.
Yep, and they got to do their due diligence. You know, he was telling us how they spoke to Connor Bedard, despite the fact they knew they were going to have no shot in drafting him. But you want to learn about the kid. You want to know what he's all about. The Combine is a great opportunity to do that. They're interviewing 70-plus prospects during this week at the Combine. So they're doing their due diligence and that. And I also thought it was kind of cool was when he said when Cale Makar a few years ago, when he came into the room and they're asking Cale questions, but he's also taking notes and questioning the amateur scouts and maybe the GM, maybe he has a question. So really, really cool stuff there. I urge all our fans to check out all the NHL.com draft features, lists, previous draft class podcasts in one centralized site on NHL.com/events/draft-coverage-central. And Adam, we all know if everyone has liked this episode of NHL Draft Class, check out the previous shows, included interviews with Central Scouting's David Gregory and Sportsnet's Jason Bukala, previewing the Combine and discussing several draft-eligible players. We had Central's John Williams on for a WHL preview, Pat Cohen for a USHL and NTDP preview, JF Danfoos was on for Q players. We had Dan Moore on for the final ranking. So a lot of great episodes that are evergreen they can check out.
Absolutely, as well as the mock draft we put out following the NHL draft lottery where we did the first 16 picks, how we think it's going to go. And we're going to have a lot more. As you mentioned, we're flooding the zone on NHL.com. We've got coming up interviews with Medicine Hat forward Caden Lindstrom. Maybe one of the more interesting picks in the draft because of the injury factor and where he could end up. University of Denver defenseman Zeev Bouyam, national champion, world junior champion, and NTDP star forward Cole Iserman. Where is Cole going to go?
Yeah.
The scoring sensation Can he do more, though, than just shoot? We'll have to ask him that, and we'll find out all about that.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. Really curious to see where those players go.
So stay tuned. NHL Draft Class, free anywhere you enjoy your podcast. But for now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.